Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Make sure to head over to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support our work directly, because this show is made possible thanks in part to viewers like you. If you like the work we do, become a member, and you'll also get access to uncensored, members-only shows from Timcast IRL, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. You can also join our Discord server and talk with like-minded individuals. Now, let's get into that first story. Letitia James may begin seizing Trump's assets and properties as soon as Monday, as Trump's debt is due and he can't pay. As Kevin O'Leary says, $500 million bonds don't exist. It's never happened before. It's impossible for anyone to pay. Unfortunately for this country, we are plagued by people who are both evil, stupid, or one or the other, and that creates very serious problems. There's no way Donald Trump, even with a net worth of $2.6 billion, can get $500 million liquid. He's going to have to sell his buildings or see them taken from him. You know, I think a lot of people make this mistake. Perhaps just me. Growing up, there is a misunderstanding due to a lack of wisdom as to how things actually take place when states collapse into authoritarianism. We grew up hearing these stories of people being taken by the Gestapo, taken by the Gulag. I believe the Gulag was actually the department, not the place. I heard a story from a friend in Ukraine about two neighbors, and they didn't like each other. So one neighbor called the police and said, "My neighbor is talking about how communism is bad." The next day, the house was completely empty. They cleared it out like that. We hear these stories, and we assume that when it gets bad, when we are in the dictatorship, the authoritarianism, there will be actions taken by the state without justification. That simply the state will decree, "Donald Trump, you're an enemy of the state, and we are going to take your belongings." That's not how it goes. There's always an underlying claim to justify the actions being taken. What we are witnessing right now is the use of state force and violence against the front runner for the presidential election by his political opponents. It is no more simple. It is no more complicated. It's just this. The state is declaring Trump's properties forfeit for no reason other than he is an enemy of their agenda and regime. There will not come a time when a communist party in this country comes out and says, "You are hereby an enemy of the state for your political beliefs, so we're taking your belongings." That's not how they operate. That's not what they'll do. No, of course. They'll say something like, "Donald Trump committed fraud. Donald Trump has defrauded the people." That's quite literally what they're saying. There's no other way to go about doing this. Vanity Fair gloats. Letitia James could start seizing Trump's assets on Monday after the ex-president admits he's too cash poor to pay $464 million civil fraud judgment. That actually is remarkable. There are many people in this country and the world who think being rich means you have cash, but that's the stupidest thing imaginable. They don't have cash. Bezos, for instance, I think his salary is like $80,000 a year. That's right. Jeff Bezos' salary, I think it was reported like $80,000 a year. And then with bonuses, he does clear about $1 million. But hold on, Bezos? Didn't he just surpass Elon Musk? They're competing over who's the wealthiest guy in the world. Bezos is certainly up there. I don't know who's currently the most wealthy, but typically it is Elon. But now that this court stripped Elon of his own company assets, you see where this is going. But for Jeff Bezos, to keep it on point, he doesn't have billions of dollars in cash. In fact, he can't even sell his stock in Amazon because there are rules, there are laws. Net worth. It's completely meaningless. I'll tell you this, one thing that's fascinating about net worth. The way they calculate the net worth of a company, if it has shares, how much could you sell each share for? And if you can, then how much would you have if you sold all your shares? Is how they calculate your net worth. What about privately held companies like Twitter? Nobody really knows. What we're witnessing right now, my friends, is quite literally you're in the communist dictatorship. It is here. There's nothing else could change. There's only in the most extreme of scenarios where you enter into this world, is it going to be a unilateral dictatorial force decreeing from the high heavens that they have absolute control. It's just not how it works. There are several things that may happen in this coming week, but I do have some other news for you all pertaining to this. And, you know, it's kind of wild because periodically there's news that makes me particularly fearful for what comes next. And then some days news is fairly dry. Nothing's really going on and things seem stable. Slow news day, not a lot happening. Maybe we'll go out and get some barbecue. And it's pretty interesting that you can just go out and get barbecue. But this is, again, the mistake of history, the mistake of movies. You know, people think guns and punches have this strange sound because of Hollywood. And people think because of movies and TV shows that if you were ever to wake up in a nightmare dystopia, it would be just like this absolute dictator who marches down the street screaming and just executing people. Now, don't get me wrong. Things could get worse. Worse than they are now. And that's where we're heading. And I've got stories to show you. You know, yesterday we talked about this woman. She had a house in New York. Squatters took it over. They're now reporting that vigilantes are showing up to try and evict the men, the squatters. You know what comes next. Perhaps we enter the good old boys territory. The police are helping the squatters, so local guys will just show up and then beat the living crap out of these squatters in the middle of the night. Because police won't do anything about it anyway. Anarcho tyranny. Vigilantism, I warned about, is coming. Now, again, don't get me wrong, things could get worse. I don't think it gets worse in the sense of what we're seeing with government control. Certainly, you get to the point of executions and imprisonment and things like that. But the way I see it right now with what they're doing to Donald Trump, there's tact. If they want to exert absolute control, it's one thing when there's no mass media, and it's a lot easier to get away with very serious crimes of violence. With mass media, the appropriate strategy is what we're seeing right now. They, you know, government forces learned this a long time ago. When you kill someone, you immortalize them. You make them a martyr, essentially, a saint of their cause. And so they try, and when I say they, I mean powerful interests, be it corporate or government in any part of the world. Interests that are willing to cross that line will try to avoid it unless they have no choice. Take a look at this Vanity Fair article, and then I'll show you the breakdown of what actually may happen. This woman, Bess Levin, being, of course, completely ignorant to how economics works, seems to think any human being has $500 million in cash. She goes on to say, on Monday, the ex-president's attorneys told an appellate court they can't find a company willing to give him a bond to cover the $464 million judgment rendered against him in a civil fraud case. Ironically, that found him liable of inflating his net worth. In their filing, Trump's legal team said that ongoing diligent efforts have proven that a bond in the judgment of the full amount is a practical impossibility, adding that Team Trump has approached about 30 surety companies through four separate brokers. None of them will cover $464 million. The funny thing is, she goes on to write, but wait, one might say, if Trump is as rich as he says he is, and his business is as successful as he has long claimed, coming up with $557 million should be no problem. Excuse me? No human could do that. No single individual human could do that. The insurance companies can't even do that. No one has $500 million. Maybe the U.S. government, because they can print it. But of course, Trump isn't as rich as he claims to be. As of last year, he was reportedly worth $2.6 billion, which is a lot richer than your average American, but nowhere near what he has bragged, and definitely not enough to put up more than $500 million in cash. Literally no one could. I give you now Kevin O'Leary. Hear from him. This is absolutely remarkable where we're at in this country. And Kevin O'Leary, an actual businessman on outside of the Trump sphere, here's how he breaks it down.
I don't think this case is about Trump anymore. I think this case is about New York. It's about the American brand. It's about what we promised the world in terms of fairness and justice and investing capital in a country that's built the largest economy on earth. Forfeiture, seizing of assets. Is that in our nomenclature in America? Is that what we tell people that want to bring their money here and protect property rights? Forget about Trump. Nothing to do with Trump. You think this is good for business in New York? You think this is good for business in America? To take a law that we use to protect people against buying refrigerators at an overpriced value decades ago and apply it against an individual and then talk about seizing assets like he was in Venezuela? Or in Cuba? This is very, very, very bad look for New York. And everybody around the world is watching this. This may be great for this Attorney General, but this is not good for America.
But in terms of the valuation, can you be clear as to why? I mean, why would the properties not be sufficient collateral?
What a great message to send out all around the world. Take a claim where there was no monies lost. There was no fraud here in the context of actually people losing money. Deutsche Bank, who made the loan, was made whole. And let's make a penalty of $500 million against a crime, apparently, where no monies were lost. Great message for New York. Great message for America. Bring your capital because we'll protect your property. I think that was a statement that would be much better made sometime in Venezuela. I'm not kidding. That's a scary, scary message. And by the way, there are no such thing as
$500 million
bonds.
The laws exist to protect
the marketplace. There are no...
This woman, the communist, I believe, from the Washington Post, says the laws exist to protect the marketplace. Kevin O'Leary already pointed out nobody lost any money. Deutsche Bank and other lenders said we do our own analysis, then we negotiate on that analysis. Donald Trump goes to these banks and says, I got a building, I think it's worth $500 million. Deutsche Bank says, well, we'll come and check. They come back, nah, it's probably $300-$400. Trump says, okay, then how about we do this? How about we do the loan at $250? We'll split the difference. I say five, you say four. I only want a 50% loan. How about you call it $250? Leaning towards my side, but still a smaller loan than we can get. Deutsche Bank says 200. That's your loan amount. Building's collateral. Trump says, you got it. Trump then pays back the loan. Deutsche Bank says everything worked out perfectly, and that's normal business. The smirking communist in New York represents the idiocy, the ignorance, and I mean the fault for the most part of the generations before us who allow this stuff. And look, I'm sorry if you're older, but the machine was trending in this direction. As the saying goes, strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make hard times. Hard times make strong men. And unfortunately for us, this cycle is it's probably an 80-year cycle. Strauss-Au generational theory, meaning there's nothing you can really do as an individual because you watching, you may be the strong men and women of the older generation who fought to preserve this. But like a tidal wave, ignorance, apathy, and degeneracy took hold and began to grow as people chose non-confrontation over preservation of life, liberty, and their values. And now here we are. Kevin O'Leary, an actual real estate developer and businessman, is saying, I'm going to pull my assets out of New York City, out of New York. This is insane. New York is no longer safe for us. This is unprecedented Venezuela or Cuba level seizure of assets. It's communist. And these smirking communists like this woman here, it's protecting the market. It's funny because, you know, I would only assume that she is very, very stupid. Very stupid. But they're not protecting the marketplace. Letitia James has just destroyed the marketplace because of some political and ideological vendetta.
Oh, half a billion dollar bonds. Never.
Let's
been
go back.
Before.
This is important.
That's a scary, scary message. And by the way, there are
again,
no such thing
the
as
laws
half a
exist
billion
to
dollar
protect
bonds.
The marketplace.
There are no half a billion dollar bonds. Never been done before. Never. This law has never been applied. Forget about Trump. Nothing to do with Trump. Everything to do about America and the New York brand. I love this state. My children live here. A horrible message to everybody around the world watching this. Absolutely horrific.
Well, wait, Kevin, but hold on.
And that's about it. But there are no half a billion dollar bonds. They don't exist. There is no circumstance where someone says you've got to pay half a billion dollars, the full amount of a judgment where no fraud was committed, no money was lost. There was no actual trial over whether fraud was even committed. And that's something people don't understand. You are witnessing how communist dictatorship works. And I don't know if communist is even the right word at this point. We can literally just say authoritarian. The judge says, summary judgment for the state. Trump committed fraud, no trial allowed. They then have a fake trial about whether Trump forged documents and what the damages would be. People in this country who don't pay attention assume there was a trial and Trump lost it. There was not. The judge issued a summary judgment for the state that Trump committed fraud. If you can't operate in New York anymore. You can't operate in California either. We divested. I don't know if divested is the right word, but we steer clear of California since the inception of this company. There have been a couple instances where there have been, you know, interested parties that we could maybe contract. But I just said we don't do business in California at all. We stay away from California because, you know, it's a deal with the devil. And now as New York is expanding this, things are getting particularly bad. We have to consider whether or not we have to also divest from New York, which is a big challenge because that's where Cast Brew Coffee is distributed in a politically moderate area of New York. And the company that we go through for distribution, they're based AF and good people. They're not super political, but they oppose the cancel culture stuff. It's a good business. But the challenge is the state of New York could just come and seize it at a moment's notice. Castbrew.com, that's our coffee company. We're building a coffee shop. When we were setting it up, I was looking for a politically moderate area that we could find. So I was looking for distributors, and we found some, talked to a few of them, looked up their history, looked at where their headquarters are, and checked the politics of the area. I said, moderate's where we want to be. We don't need to go to MAGA country. I mean, that could be good. But a lot of these companies are all big cities. So finding something the best we can get at scale for the scale we're starting out at is going to have to be something bigger, closer to a larger metro. And I looked at New York and I saw what they offered and we talked and they had the best prices. They had moderate politics. They had assurances against cancel culture and all this other stuff. And I said, this is great. It's a good company and they do good work. The problem we have now that we have to start considering. Letitia James could go to this company and just seize their assets, finger snap. There's no laws broken, it doesn't matter. New York is probably the most dangerous place to operate a business right now because the state, the judges have outright said, we will just take from you whatever we want and what can you do about it? Using the threat of monopolistic violence against you to break the law, and there is nothing to stop them. Now, I hope Donald Trump gets elected in November, and as president, he sends the DOJ into New York and arrests Judge Engerin and arrests Letitia James, criminal charges. Now, of course, there's no such thing as the unilateral arrest. Let the left cry and whinge and scream authoritarian or dictator or whatever. I'm saying Donald Trump should appoint an appropriate attorney general who then launches a criminal investigation. And then probably it would start with probably some sort of litigation, suspension of federal funding. And then I believe that we can clearly get grand jury indictments at the federal level against these individuals. The only thing right now is, well, they're working at the behest of Joe Biden. They are trying to help Joe Biden stop Trump. And it's not so much Joe Biden. Joe Biden's a bumbling dotard who has no idea what's going on. But it's the establishment uniparty. They've got nothing. They've got Joe Biden. I hope, but I don't know that it's true, that Trump gets elected. And the first thing he does is he appoints someone, say, Kash Patel to AG. And they immediately begin the process of going after these rogue states. California and New York must be brought to heel because they are acting in such brazen defiance of this country's laws. Don't get me wrong, the federal government as well. Some of the other news that we have right now is that last night, the Supreme Court allowed Texas to enforce its immigration law. So a lower court then overturned its decision, shutting down the whole chain of events, which basically nullifies. It's the craziest scenario. So Texas passes this law to deport and arrest illegal immigrants. The courts are a federal government challenges him. A federal court says, you can't do this. Another court says, you can't do this. The Supreme Court says, no. While we're pending litigation, they can do this. So a lower court says, we vacate our rule, and which reverts it back to another lower court, nullifying the Supreme Court in one of the craziest stories I've ever seen. Supreme Court's ruling was, the stay is lifted. Texas can enforce this while we wait. So the lower court actually says, then we dissolve our ruling on this. Therefore, the Supreme Court's ruling on our ruling is now moot, and the lower court ruling will stand. Texas cannot enforce their law. It's the most insane thing I've ever heard. I'm probably getting something wrong there because I don't understand how the Supreme Court can say you can do this, and then a lower court nullifies a ruling which then blocks them from doing it. I do not see how come November, this resolves itself in any way. I don't see it. You thought 2021 was bad, 2020? I don't know, man. Vigilantes in New York trying to stop squatters. What happens next? You got another video of someone getting stabbed in the face, I think it was, in New York in the subway. People who are trying to stop the crime are going to jail. The criminals are protected. And that's it. It's Gotham City. New York and Chicago, L.A., they're turning into Gotham. The criminals are in control of the machine. Letitia James is like a Lex Luthor type character. I mean, it's unfair to say because Lex Luthor is substantially more intelligent than her. But these people are comic book villains. It is the criminal underbelly winning political power, allowing their friends to run rampant and destroy everything, steal homes, steal banks, steal from banks, and then attack anyone who dares oppose them. That's where we're currently at. The BBC gives us a few scenarios. I believe that the most likely scenario is that Trump will get a pause, that several judges will actually suspend the judgment because the act of seizing the properties is a serious risk to the state. And so what's likely going to happen is, come March 25th, when the money is due, a panel of judges will likely say the appeal can move forward with, you know, and they might say a small bond or something, perhaps. So that's another one of these options, a compromise option. They already denied Trump the $100 million bond, but it's entirely possible, and I believe the most likely, is that they will not seize his buildings. They will not force him to sell the buildings, which is Trump saying they may do. But if Trump were to sell the buildings and then win, it creates a very serious problem for the state, as they could face serious liabilities and risks should Trump then file some kind of counterclaim, malicious prosecution. Letitia James said outright when she was campaigning she would go after Trump, proving selective and malicious enforcement of the law. If Trump can take that to a higher court and win, New York is in serious trouble and they know it. So why do it? They are basically, it's reckless abandon. It is if it's kamikaze. That's what we're seeing from New York State. If they stop Trump, they face no repercussions. But this is the gambit. If this is attempted and fails, their lives are over. There's not a single Republican, save maybe Trump, that has that conviction, the willingness. Well, I take that back. That's unfair. Peter Navarro is being sent to prison. Steve Bannon, of course. So there are a handful of the MAGA types. But I should say in the Republican Party, for the most part, where's any DA, AG, anyone? Nowhere to be found. I have no idea, man. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I can tell you this. I don't see how come November there's an off-ramp here. You think if Trump wins, Letitia James, Hillary Clinton, Obama, these people are just going to say, well, I guess we lost. You think that if Joe Biden wins, that Trump supporters are going to say, well, I guess that's it. We're after the millions of non-citizens flooded this country, we're given our taxpayer money. After they used communist authoritarian tactics against their political opponents. When I read that story, and I'll do a longer segment about it later on, about the squatters, the police defending the squatters. Let me stress this. In New York, you get all these people being like, no, don't be mad at the cops, Tim. The cops show up. They go to the squatters who have no proof they reside in this building. And they ask them, please, can you show me anything that proves you've been here? And they go, no. And they go, okay, well, you have to leave then. But ma'am, don't you dare change your own locks. No, hold on. These men had no evidence they lived in the building to the point where the police escorted them out, but threatened the homeowner anyway, because the police are on the side of the squatters, because they are party to this destruction. You cannot back the blue when the blue has hired communists, because then you're just basically saying, if the communist wears a badge, I support communism. I'm not saying that there aren't good cops. I'm saying this idea that you would outright blindly defend a police department anywhere when they have been for the past 4 years onboarding communists at an alarming pace, you're nuts. I back the people and I back the heroes, but things are getting crazy. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. It's a major viral story. A woman shows up to a home she inherited from her parents to find that there are squatters living there. The squatters are unable to prove they live there, so the police tell them, unfortunately, you have to leave. But they warn the homeowner that if she changes the locks on her own home, she will be arrested. Despite the fact these men have no evidence they actually live there because, well, they're squatters. Why did the police try so hard to defend the squatters? The cops knew they were squatters. The cops knew these men had no proof they lived there, which anyone who was actually renting a property would. But they still warned the homeowner. Why? These cops are communists. Police officers have been quitting en masse for the past several years. The departments have been recruiting ideologically captured individuals, and they are acting as though there is a rule set. But like referees that want one team to win, they tell the homeowner, don't you dare use this home as your own. And to those men, look, just get me some proof you've been here. Anything. The man leaves and comes back with some kind of bill. We don't know what it was. The police say, okay, good enough for us. Ma'am, you're under arrest. They arrest the homeowner. What comes next? I have long warned about. Vigilantes show up to evict squatters at Queen's home where owner was arrested, as neighbors reveal three people have been living there for free and carrying out work inside. The neighbors in this area where the squatters have taken over the home are terrified. They say these people have moved in. They're criminals. They know that they're doing something untoward. They're trying to cover up what they're doing. And many people say, well, you just got to go to court. You got to go to court. Vigilantes. Now, I don't know what these guys actually did. When the press asked these vigilantes, they said, we're just going to talk to them. But I think you all know what comes next. I think about how things used to be. Man, you couldn't get away with this stuff 30, 40 years ago. You could not. Communities were closer. cops would not cross locals. But now it doesn't matter. The police serve the regime. And it's been that way for some time. You used to have the small town cop who was worried about being shunned by the community. But as the machine grows and it becomes more national and international, the less they care about you because you have no power over them. I think about the Civil War. There were men who were trained at West Point. Alongside many Union generals, Confederate generals stood. But when the states seceded, they had to make a choice, my home or my country. And they said, Virginia is my home. I can't abandon it. See, these men who were trained military leaders and served with the United States still had to make a choice for their community. The big effort we're seeing right now among the communists is to shatter this community, and it's working. To make sure that police have no ties to their neighbors, so when there is something to be enforced at the ideological level, the cops, with smiles on their faces, will arrest a middle-aged woman who owns the home that she inherited because they don't know you, they don't care about you, and there are no consequences. Conservatives gleefully will say, back the blue, no matter who. Democrats at the same time will say, vote blue, no matter who. And I say, support the individuals that are doing a good job. If I see a police officer do an act of heroism, I will congratulate him. But inherently, what we're seeing now in most major cities, especially after the George Floyd riots 4 years ago, the police have been replaced with ideologically captured individuals or just the banality of evil. So I stress this again to you. When the police show up and we watch this video, the police tried their hardest to help the squatters. Why would you do that? Well, I'll tell you what comes next. I don't see any path forward after November where things would be peaceful. I hope and I pray that Trump wins. Everything remains peaceful. He brings on a good AG and they start weeding out the corruption that we're seeing here and protecting the American people. But you really think the left will be peaceful? Of course not. Now, in the inverse, should Trump lose, I think this country devolves into tribalist, barbarian-like conflict. Maybe I shouldn't say barbarian-like, but I mean the left will certainly go around just taking what they want. This will result in more conservative areas shoring up their own defenses, and it'll put them at odds with the regime police forces. Cops who would gleefully enforce unconstitutional edict against innocent people. They don't care about the Constitution. It means nothing to them. So vigilantes show up. I don't know to what extent you can actually call them vigilantes, but that's how it's being reported by numerous outlets. I tell you what the next thing that's going to happen is. This middle-aged woman is trying to sell the property. There are people who live next door to these criminals who are squatting. I fear the next story we're going to hear is that these men are murdered. I don't want any one of these people to die. I don't want anybody to die. I think they should go to jail. I think they should be criminally charged. They're clearly lying about what's going on. But I think once you cross that threshold, and we're now dealing with squatters in New York, and it's happening all the time. I'll give you the scenario. The police tried so hard to defend the squatters against the actual property owner. All that need happen is something as simple as this. New York's going to see a wave of this. You book an Airbnb. You pay the bill. You leave. You come back 30 days later. Have a locksmith change the locks. You know, it's really simple. Have a letter sent to the address for you. Get a new phone plan and put that Airbnb address as their phone plan. Pay for it one night at the Airbnb. The person who owns the Airbnb has no idea that you signed up for a cell phone plan using that address. And then call a locksmith, shows up, and you say, here's my phone bill, here's the address. And they go, you got it. They pop open that door. In fact, you might even be able to use that phone bill to get an ID and say, here's my new address. You've not been there at all. Change the locks, and now the apartment is yours. Of course, you'll then have to deal with the actual owner of the property who says, well, what are you doing on my property? And this person need only say, if you do not leave, I will call the police. I'm the rightful tenant of this property. The police will show up. This individual, after being in the building for only 10 minutes, will say, here's my ID. I live here. And the cops say, civil issue. Bye-bye. That's how easy it is. And there's nothing anyone can do about it. That's where we're currently at in terms of places like New York, where communists have completely taken over. You take a look at what they're doing to Trump. They've taken over. Now the next set of actions start beginning, especially with the squatting. It is quite remarkable, in fact. The individual could get an ID with they have a utility bill. Like, who has phones anymore? I just have a cell phone. I live here. They could even drop a fake lease. What are you going to do about it? What do you do? It's a civil issue. Prove it in court. Maybe they don't get an ID. Maybe that's a bit extreme. But even with a cell phone bill, they can get a locksmith to come out. Better yet, they can call the police and say, here's where I paid rent to be here. Here's my phone bill. I've been here for a month. They changed the locks on me. The police will then help you. This is something I've talked about quite a bit in the past, actually, and it's been this way for some time. It's an idea of whoever calls the police first wins. And it tends to be true, but not always. I'll jump to that in a second. What I fear now with these vigilantes is that there's ways to solve problems. There's ways that locals solve problems that I don't think actually solves anything, but in the short term, these squatters in this house, they're going to wake up one day with three men in ski masks standing over them with baseball bats, and they're going to shatter some bone, and then they're going to leave. That's it. The homeowner is going to say, I have no idea what that was all about. In fact, maybe she doesn't even know. Maybe hearing in the news that these squatters are doing this, some of the neighbors just enter the home in the middle of the night, 10 seconds, cracking baseball bats on the legs of these men, leaving them with shattered bone, unable to walk ever again. And they leave. They don't call the cops. They don't say nothing. It's the middle of the night. Nobody reports anything. Nobody sees anything. These men who are squatters, what can they do about it? That's where I fear this goes. We do not want to live in a world like that. It's just more violence, more problems, but that's what you get. Already some guys showed up saying, hey, we want to figure out what's going on. I've seen stuff like this. Street justice is what happens when the police don't take action, and they won't. Because communists are in charge and communists are ceding control and the police don't care at all. These two cops who came to this woman's house could have said, I don't care who you think you are. We're taking you out of this house. And the man could say, but I live here, and be like, nice try, and pulled him out. That guy would have no recourse. The squatter would do nothing. He's not going to file any charges. Nothing's going to happen. But the cops don't care. And conservatives don't seem to get this. And I think the reason why is because many of them probably grew up in more rural areas where they had local cops who knew them. But in big cities, it's not right. Doesn't work that way. They have shattered community. And, you know, people like to imagine that all cops are rushing in to the danger zone. I commend those cops. I do, legitimately. But what we're witnessing is over the past several years, when in 2020, I was saying, I'm with the cops, baby. We can't abolish the police. That's insane. I still genuinely think a police force is a good thing. I do. But now when the communists have replaced the police department with other communists, now you're backing communists wearing blue. That makes no sense. None. So no, you don't back the blue no matter who. Democrats vote blue no matter who. And what happens when the Democrats put their blue commies in uniform? You going to defend them as they do this? I don't know how long it's going to take, but sooner or later, you're going to get the mob. It's going to be mafia. You know, the funny thing is, the stories that we used to get is the protection racket. Mafia had come to the business and say, look, if you want to be safe, you pay us. We come by once a week, you pay us. And then it's made to look like they're the bad guys. But the reality is, you see what's going on right now in New York with these, and not even in New York, LA, Chicago, where these roving bands go around ransacking stores. What do you think would happen to these gangs that go around ransacking stores if these were mob-protected businesses? The mafia still existed. And they do to some extent, but not really. These young guys who are looting these stores one day wake up to see two men with ski masks standing over their bed and a couple of crowbars. And then their kneecaps shatter just like that. And those guys are gone. And nobody knows who did it. And they call the police and say, some men showed up and they attacked me. And they'll be like, sounds like a burglary. Sorry. Good luck. What are we supposed to do about it? People start to get the message. That's not a place we want to live. We want to live in a society where people get along and they don't do these things. But back in the day, if the mob says you pay the bills, we keep you safe. What do you think happens when someone comes in and ransacks that bodega? Bodega owner says, I can't pay you this week. Where's my protection, huh? And the mafia says, we take care of it. They show up to these young men who have been ransacking the stores and they say, why are you taking money from our pocket? See, organized crime is better than an anarchic crime. Anarcho-tyranny is a better way to put it. But we don't want either of it. I just see that's where we're headed. It's kind of wild to think. Squatters being protected more and more and more. Soon it won't matter. I got this tweet. I said, called it. Y'all won't like what comes next. Wall Street Silver says there are consultants that will fix this. The homeowner writes a new rental agreement with the consultant. Then the consultant moves in with the squatters and makes life very uncomfortable for them. If they call the police, the consultant has a valid rental agreement, which the owner confirms. Most of these expert consultants are huge guys and very intimidating. They will have the squatters voluntarily moving out within days. It's a nice thought, but that's not how it's going to play. That ain't going to be how it's going to play. Look, this is a middle-aged woman, okay? She's got a daughter. Her daughter's got friends. And you take a look at street justice. You take a look at what this means. This young girl's going to say, my mom inherited it. My grandparents died. And they gave us this house. And these guys took it from us. And there's going to be some 21-year-old, 23-year-old dude. And they're going to be 6'3". And they're going to be, I'm not going to call them in shape, but, you know, thicker guys, but strong guys. And they're going to say, we'll take care of you, honey. Don't you worry about it. And that's when these squatters wake up to find three men standing over them. In fact, they probably just wake up with a pillow over their face as their legs shatter within their flesh from baseball bats cracking down on them. Dude, I'm from the south side of Chicago, man. It's not a place, it's not a world you want to live in. My point with all this is I fear where this goes. I come from a place where, I mean, we've seen it in Chicago. You've seen it. It's plain as day. It's daily life. I don't know how things are there now. I left. But I can't tell you how many times somebody woke up with a dude in a ski mask pointing a gun at their forehead in Chicago. And they said, the next time you make a move against us, we pull the trigger. That's Chicago. That's how it used to be, at least. Crazy stories. Had stories of like a fight breaks out between a dude and his girlfriend. Like I'm a teenager. And then within 15 minutes, there's 12 guys outside the house and they all got guns. And then the dude fighting with the girlfriend runs away. He's like, please, please, please. Cops never get involved. Never. If the police are going to defend the squatters, it's only a matter of time before people just say the cops do nothing. But think about this. If the cops ain't arresting anybody, excuse me, if they're not arresting criminals, why would anyone fear the cops? Why would anyone have any concern? That's the breakdown. And that's what I think they want. I think the far left absolutely does want this. They want a world where the police do nothing, can't do anything, are overwhelmed or ideologically aligned with them, and the system breaks. We going back in time, baby. We're going way back in time. I don't know, though. Right? I think the media is reporting this as vigilantes. And I guess technically it's true. I mean, we don't know who these two guys are, but these two guys very well may have just been family friends, vigilantes. They may have been family friends just coming to see what's going on, talk to people who are there. One of the guys wearing a Trump shirt. I wonder if these are just two guys who saw the news and said, something's got to be done about this. Not in my town. Look, dude, communists own your city. They're cheating in politics. They're lying about everything. And the police are helping them do it. It's only a matter of time. I mean, it's crazy for me. You know, the story, J6. There were several retired and even some active duty police officers who on January 6th were in the front of the building where the riot was happening. And these former and current police officers, I think it was mostly former, said to the Capitol Police, hey, man, this is getting out of control. We're here to help you. Tell us what you need us to do, and we'll stop this. And some of these officers said, get these guys out of here. And they say, you got it, boss. Dudes wearing Trump shirts and like armor, assisting the police. And then what happens? The Capitol Police hunted them down and charged them, and they were arrested. Several individuals who tried to help the police on that day have been criminally charged and went to prison or got, you know, went through that whole system. How can that be? Well, it's really simple. Communists, I don't know if it's if communist is even the right word. I think we need a new word for it. Neocoms, they've taken over. The Capitol Police with smiles on their faces will even arrest other cops. Meanwhile, these more conservative-leaning former cops say things like, back the blue. I don't blame the cops for doing it. I blame the machine. I blame Joe Biden. I don't. These cops came to this woman's home and defended the squatters. No questions asked. They had no interest in protecting the little middle-aged woman and her daughter from these two grown men who stole the property with no proof they lived there. They don't care. Boy, oh boy. You know, I was watching A Bronx Tale. I've talked about this. I don't know if you've seen A Bronx Tale, but there's this really great scene in the movie. I think I saw it a long time ago as a kid, but passively, I don't really remember it at all. But a scene I've seen, and this guy, what's the mobster's name? Is it Sonny? I don't know. He hears a ruckus, loud motorbikes. He walks down the street and goes to the bar where he sees and hears the argument. He walks in and says, hey, what's the problem? The biker guys wearing, you know, denim jackets, vests. The bartender says, these guys are not not wearing proper attire, and we told them we won't serve them. And one of the bikers goes, look, man, we just want to have a drink, we have a beer, and then we'll be on our way. And the mob boss says, spoken like a gentleman, serve these men their drinks. Respect. I know you don't got the right clothes, but you were a nice guy to me. I'm going to get you your beer. Look at that. No pretense. No pretense. Bartender hands these men the beers, and the guys immediately then put their thumb over the bottles, shake them up, and spray down the bartender, and start laughing. Uh-oh. Mob boss was leaving, turns around, he says, okay, now you guys got to leave. And that's when that biker guy says, what the are you going to do about it? F off. So the mob boss turns around, walks to the door of the bar, closes it and locks it. Walks back over, and all of a sudden, all the bikers realize what just happened. He says, now you can't leave. I love the narration at that point. The main character then says, at that point, they knew they effed up. Back door pops open, and a bunch of good old boys come out with crowbars and baseball bats and guns and beat the living crap out of these bikers. I love the story. I do. I don't like the violence. I don't want to see that in my neighborhood. None of that. They drag these guys out, mercilessly beat them, and then smash up their motorbikes. From 0 to 11. Like that. But I love the story. I love the story because the mob boss had honor. The honor was this. You don't dress the way you're supposed to dress. The sign says you got to be dressed properly. But these guys asked politely. We just want to have a drink. And the mob boss gave them the respect they asked for. We didn't have to do it. And then they disrespected him, accosting the bartender. And after that, he only said, you got to leave. He said, I come to you with respect. You respect me, I respect you, have a beer. They sprayed down the bartender. That's not just disrespect. That's an attack on a person. Not the worst, but that's accosting somebody. And even then, he kept it at level one, saying, guys, now you got to leave. And these guys said, nah. Not only were they saying, we will attack you, we will disrespect you, and we will take your space from you. And he said, now you can't leave. I love the story. I want to live in a world, not with the violence, not with the beatdowns or anything like that, but the respect. If I want to walk into a steakhouse and I want to wear an unbuttoned shirt, jeans, and a beanie, and my money is as green as anybody else's, ain't nobody should tell me I can't spend that money. Now, if you're a private establishment, you want to have a dress code, fine. That's your establishment. A couple months ago, I think it was, we went to, we scheduled a dinner, it's at this place. They got skiing, and they got a nice restaurant. And so we go snowboarding. And so we're wearing snow pants for snowboarding. The restaurant's right indoors after you go snowboarding. Well, they tell us, you're not dressed properly, you can't come in. And I said, this is a skiing establishment. We are wearing our clothing from having gone snowboarding. No one's wearing anything bad. We're wearing waterproof pants, and we were wearing long sleeve shirts. And they said, no, button up shirts and nice pants only. I said, we scheduled this. And if you had told me in advance, we could not go snowboarding, skiing, and then come for dinner without bringing proper attire, I would never have booked this. Now, where are we supposed to go for dinner? They told us, too bad. See, that's disrespect. Okay. I can respect it's a private establishment. So when my friends were like, no, this is BS. Like, how could you? What? I said, no. That's fine. Went to the manager and I explained very calmly. I said, look, if you had told us in advance, you post on your website, you go skiing here, you cannot have dinner here unless you change your clothes, we would have bought a change of clothes. I just figured after we're done, we go and sit down and have dinner. He said, I'll take care of you. He got us a seat at a very nice, they have other restaurants, says, we're gonna make room, because everything was booked up. He said, no, we're gonna make room for you. That's respect. I respect that. It's their private establishment. They're allowed. That's the place I like to live. And this is not an expensive place we went. But the place that's being built right now is that barbarism. These guys who take this house and squat in it think, I'll just take whatever I can and I will rip it from the hands of this woman. The inheritance of her dead parents. I'll take it. The barbarians are at the gates. And ain't nobody is here to protect you. The cops certainly ain't going to do it. The cops are there to protect the barbarians. So what do you do? I don't got answers for you, my friends. I can only tell you, get out of New York. The state is is planning to seize Trump's properties. They're using the law against them. Your property rights are forfeit in New York. And now we got our coffee distributor in New York State. Not New York City, but New York State. We're going to have to start making plan B for this. Things are getting crazy, my friends, and you don't want to know where this goes next. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 4 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. In my earlier segment, I talked about the vigilantes who showed up to evict some squatters. Now, it seemed that it was mostly peaceful, and they simply tried to talk to them, but I warned that if the police do not enforce the law and the government cannot defend its people, not that it's the job of the government always to do so, but if the people can't rely on police, they'll take matters into their own hands. Now, my fear is that this will lead to an escalation of vigilante violence in the city and the state, and it'll just further break down the system. But we have another story that's been going viral, and Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks has announced, if it means to be on the left is to support bail reform in which men who are found with the severed, dismembered bodies of two middle-aged to elderly individuals. They were in their early 50s, so I think it's still middle-aged. Then she says, then I'm not on the left anymore. Cenk Uygur immediately goes, no, stop. You're on the left, please. Not literally, but you see, what's happening now is I like the idea of bail reform. I really do. I do not believe we should be a country that imprisons people for any amount of time until proven guilty, unless you have a preponderance of evidence for a real threat to the community. It's the way it's supposed to be. Let me explain. You're accused of shoplifting, and they say he stole a minor petty amount. Well, you know, I don't think that accusation warrants you going to jail and being held there without a hearing, without a trial. Why? It is better that 10 guilty persons escape than one innocent person suffer. We should have the right to defend ourselves. And what are we getting now? Why is the audio playing? Yep. Dismembering a corpse and hiding a corpse is certainly part of the story. But where was I? Bail reform. You know where we're going to go with what she's going to be talking about. So it gets pretty serious. But my point is, if someone shoplifts, you get arrested. We can't prove it. If innocent people get caught up in this, they go to jail for even 2 days, they can lose their jobs. It's a detriment to the economy, to the person's rights. If someone is arrested multiple times, at that point, I think it's fair to say the preponderance of evidence is this is a repeat offender and you lock them up. When it comes to violent crimes, it should be plainly clear you do not get let go, even if you are innocent. That's right. If you're accused of murder because you were found in a building with severed and dismembered bodies, as this story I'm about to bring you, as you heard Anna already say. Yeah, I have no problem with them saying the police found you with these dead bodies. You admit you were living in the home with these dead bodies. We're not going to let you go until we can figure out what's going on. That's fine. That's not what they're doing. And this is the warning that we gave all of these lefties when they were saying things like, let the criminals go. They began letting people go who had been arrested dozens of times. That's not the point of bail reform. But unfortunately, that's the manipulation. I want to play this clip. It's 3 minutes long where Anna breaks down what's going on. And I think I commend Anna. I have never agreed with her more. She hits the nail on the head with the hammer. She is completely right about everything she's saying. I respect it. First, let me give you the story from Fox 59. Suspects in case of body parts found scattered across Long Island freed without bail. Four people charged in connection to severed body parts found scattered across Long Island have been freed without bail, according to Suffolk County Executive Ed Romaine. This is outrageous and completely unacceptable in a civilized society. When our prosecutors are handcuffed and those charged with the same as crime are mandated by the state to go free. Last Thursday, a student discovered a severed arm of a 53-year-old man at the eastern end of Southards Pond Park in Babylon, police said. More body parts belonging to the man and a 59-year-old woman were also found in the park. More human remains were found on Tuesday in a wooded area across from 103 Lakeway Drive in West Babylon. By Wednesday morning, four suspects were charged with concealment of a human corpse, hindering prosecution and tampering with physical evidence. In the courtroom, prosecutors said the four defendants hacked the two bodies to pieces in a home on Railroad Avenue in Amityville. They said the house was uninhabitable after investigators searched the plumbing for blood and other evidence. Sources indicate the crimes were not gang related. Less than an hour after being arraigned, all four suspects were released without bail. Unfortunately, due to bail reform passed by New York State Legislature in 2019, charges relating to the mutilation and disposal of murdered corpses are no longer bail eligible. I just love it. Welcome to the world. I'm telling you, man, the good old boys are coming back. You're going to get some young dudes fresh out of church, and they're going to have baseball bats, and these people getting released better hide. I don't want to live in that world. That's not the world we need to live in. I'm warning that's where this is going. If we don't have the police actually hold these people, and maybe they're innocent, fine, with their own protection. Yo, this is insane. None of the suspects have been charged with murder, but they do expect, sources do expect murder charges soon. Here's what it sounds like. They invaded someone's home, murdered and mutilated the people who lived there, scattered the body parts to try and obfuscate their involvement or something. Now let me play this clip from Anna Kasparian. You can hear for yourself. Actually, maybe you didn't hear what she said because it was on the other speaker, but I'll play it for you now.
Dismembering a corpse and hiding a corpse after dismembering it. Not bail eligible. Not a serious crime. I'm not even kidding, guys. Like when Joy Behar outlined that case, I was like, she's crazy. This isn't a thing. This isn't real. This isn't real. So I looked it up. It's real, guys. It's real. Listen, if being on the left means supporting this, then I'm not on the left and I'm okay with that. So let me give you the details of the case.
It doesn't mean that.
Okay, if being on the left means supporting this, then I'm not on the left and I'm okay with that. So let me give you the details of the case.
It doesn't mean that.
Okay, I don't know. Let me give you the details.
On the left. We're all on the left. We don't want people dismembering folks getting released. Only a couple
some
of
do.
Lunatic.
Some do. Some
no,
do.
I know. What I was in the middle of saying is only a couple of lunatic activists are like, yeah, we're pro dismemberment guys being let go. Okay, whatever. You don't represent the left at all.
These poor criminals who dismembered bodies. It's so unfair to put them in prison. Okay, let me give you the details of the actual case, okay?
Anna Kasparian is 100% correct. Cenk Uygur is deflecting and trying to protect the idea of the left. It's insane. Anna is 100% correct. Go on any forums. Go into any of these activist spaces, and they'll and these people like Cenk will say, no, it's only few and far between. It's been years, dude. It's been 5 years. We've had people pushed onto the subway tracks and crushed. And these activists have maintained this position. They went out into Times Square and celebrated October 7th's attack on Israel. Okay, yeah, the Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th. You want to get into the, oh, I don't care about Israel. I don't care about, you know, Palestine. Oh, Israel's bad. Palestine's bad. I'm not even trying to get into that. I'm saying, I got no problem when you say Hamas is bad. I got no problem when people say that Israel is engaged in excessive actions in Palestine. I say, it's war. It's awful. I don't like any of it. I don't want anybody to die. I'm the United States here. Like, I'm an American citizen. I don't know about this foreign policy stuff. I don't want to be involved in it, right? I know a lot about foreign policy. I mean, like, I don't know why we're involved in it. But when you have activists go out cheering and celebrating murder, videos of people gunning people down, and then screaming and crying when there's return fire. I'm not talking about the people who are saying Israel's gone too far. I'm saying the people who celebrated Hamas from the get-go. Anna's correct. I'm sure the Young Turks are going to be mad and be like, well, Tim's conflating this. You know, we're not saying that. No, get out of here. Anna's correct. It is not a fringe faction. It is the core of the far left that want destabilization in this country. So perhaps it's fair to say, you know, there's a little middle ground here. Cenk is correct in that your typical person on the left is not advocating for dismemberment and murder. But they do want it, at least in the short term. Why? It's called decolonization. There's more than enough videos of more than enough activists ranging from the least known to the most prominent, where they say, take the land, take their homes, take their property. They call people an inhuman. Cenk is wrong about this one.
So four people were arrested in New York after body parts were found in Long Island. Okay, dismembered body parts. The victims were, two people from Yonkers, older individuals. Suffolk County police say 44-year-old Stephen Brown, 38-year-old Jeffrey Mackey, 40-year-old Amanda Wallace, and 33-year-old Alexis Nieves, were charged with concealment of a corpse, tampering with physical evidence, and hindering prosecution. They have not been charged with murder. Prosecutors told a judge, there was so much blood in pipes, sink, shower, and toilet of the Railroad Avenue home in Amityville where the suspects were arrested that it was deemed uninhabitable. Police said they confiscated meat cleavers, butcher knives, flesh, and body parts. Attorneys for Brown and Mackey admitted that their clients lived in that home where the body parts and all that blood was found, but denied chopping up the 59-year-old woman and 53-year-old man whose last known address was in Yonkers. Wallace also lived with Brown and Mackey in Amityville. Police said that Knives is homeless. Okay, all four pleaded not guilty. The judge released them without bail. They were fitted with GPS monitoring and must report in person for in-person probation and surrender their passports.
I don't care about their passports.
Dude, guys, like what? Okay, so did further research because I just couldn't believe it. Here's more. With 2019 state reforms, mutilation and disposal of murdered corpses are among crimes that are no longer bail eligible. The DA said the four went to barbaric lengths to cover the crime. What are we doing? What are we doing?
What are you doing?
What are we doing, Cenk?
I don't know.
What are we doing?
I don't
know. What are we doing? Someone tell me, what the F are we doing?
Yeah, look, no one signed up for this. I don't know how the hell any of these laws passed. I went to every progressive conference there was over the last 20 years. I never heard a single person saying, why don't we let the actual criminals go? Hey, if someone butchers someone and chops them up into little pieces, let's do the kind of criminal justice reform where they would be able to walk out free.
Yeah, come at me right now and tell me I'm the bad guy because I want these people who dismembered corpses and tried to conceal the evidence in prison. Come at me and tell me I'm the bad guy. Come at me.
Okay, well, let's play this game then. The Young Turks typically take statements from like me, for instance, misconstrue them in order to garner, I don't know, internet points among the left for reasons, I guess, to generate money or something. So if you're wondering how you got to this point, perhaps it's because you have moderate, rational individuals, perhaps like me and those of you watching, who are smeared relentlessly as far right for pointing this out when y'all proposed the law. And when Jake says, I don't know how any of these laws got passed, because you were advocating for them, because AOC was advocating for them. And we said, guys, this is not a good idea. I personally support bail reform, but you can't do it this way. And here we are. And now Anna is shocked, shocked, I say. Okay, look, I have no interest in running segments where I misconstrue the political positions of Anna Kasparian or Cenk Uygur. I had Cenk on the Culture War podcast, and what happened? Y'all watched what happened. I get all these messages from people saying, Tim, how could you be so calm and rational with Cenk doing what he was doing? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Famously, several instances where I said something like the Ahmaud Arbery case, the facts of the case are interesting, and Cenk just says, y'all are racist, they killed a jogger, and I'm like, that's not the facts of the case. So if you are wondering, good sir, how we come to this point, I believe the dam has broken, especially for Anna. Cenk, I think, is a grifter. I think he's an irrational, emotional person. And he has a defensive barrier where when I was having a conversation with him and I said, like the Ahmaud Arbery case, the facts of the case, for those that aren't familiar, is that there was a black man who was witnessed burglarizing a home. Fact. The police went door to door with a picture saying, we're looking for this man. He's a suspect in the string of burglaries that affected this neighborhood. A gun had been stolen. Eventually, someone reported to the McMichaels, the father and son who are in prison, that they believe the suspect was seen fleeing. And so they called the police. The police said, do not pursue. They pursued anyway, probably shouldn't have, armed. And somehow ended up in front of Ahmaud Arbery. Another man had filmed Arbery running and decided to follow behind and film what was happening, uninvolved with the McMichaels in any way. Ahmaud Arbery ran from behind the truck of the McMichaels, around the vehicle, and then flanked left and engaged in physical conflict with, I believe, Travis, the younger, the son, fighting over a shotgun. In the scuffle, the shotgun went off, hitting Ahmaud Arbery. I mean, you're fighting for a gun. These things happen. Ahmaud Arbery dies. He was not jogging. He was not a jogger. And the question in the case, as the jury are the arbiters of fact and not law, the question of fact was, did the McMichaels have the right to engage in a citizen's arrest of an alleged felon, a felony suspect, I should say, not felon, but felony suspect? That is to say, the law says if a felony was committed, you do not need to be a witness to the crime in order to engage in citizen's arrest. If it is a misdemeanor, you do. However, the law was not worded very well. I believe it was missing a comma of some sort. And so there were no instructions provided to the jury as to that finding of fact. And the jury found if the law is interpreted blankly, they say the law says you can't engage in citizen's arrest. That was the issue of the Ahmaud Arbery case. Not that white men got in a truck to lynch a black man. But Cenk Uygur pursued that narrative and he genuinely believed it. Now, I think Cenk is putting up a defensive barrier because, well, he probably knows something doesn't seem right in that story, but he doesn't want to oppose his own base by saying otherwise. I've had no problem disagreeing with my own audience when it comes to police, when it comes to the TikTok bill or otherwise. And I've long said, if in the end, everyone just cancels on me and refuses to watch ever again and my viewership shrinks, so be it. I'm not playing that game where I just say things for the sake of getting an audience. I think Cenk Uygur is doing that. Anna Kasparian, not so much. Why? Well, she's not running the business. So what happens for Anna is she's not there to maintain some facade, only a little bit. But more and more as the personal slides against
her.
Oh, here she goes, about to go off. More and more as there are personal slights against her for saying things like, why are we supporting people who were found in a home with blood and guts and flesh? They should be in jail and then they'll have their trial. I completely agree. The world you live in, Anna, You're dancing on the edge of the matrix, lady. Sooner or later, and I think already at this point, you are right wing. Welcome to, I don't know what you'd call it, the post-liberal, disaffected liberal, whatever you want to say. Because I assure you, this will not change. Your statements today, as statements have been made numerous times by me and many others, from conservative to liberal, now post-liberal, they call it, disaffected liberal. We have said, why are you doing this? Don't pass these laws, and it does not change. It only gets worse. However, when the likes of Anna Kasparian and even Cenk Uygur are forced to recognize the psychotic meltdown that is the rule of law, then I think maybe positive change comes because the dam is breaking. Let's play the rest of this clip.
Come at me.
I don't, guys.
Insane. You guys are insane. Anyone who thinks this is okay is insane. And everyone else in New York has to suffer the consequences of this with random bag checks at the subway by National Guard troops.
That's right. As Sean Fitzgerald, actual Justice Warrior, pointed out, a lot of people in America, and yes, that includes on the left, feel exactly like Anna Kasparian in this mega rant. How does it make sense that you have the National Guard searching old ladies in the subway, but the four arrested for dismembering two people get released automatically without bail? I've got a clip from the YouTube video from the full Young Turks. They played this segment from The View. Let me play this for you now.
You deployed hundreds of state police and National Guard troops into the subway system. But since the pandemic, you have done a wonderful job. Overall crime is down in the city.
Yes, it is.
So my question to you is, why now? Why deploy to the subway? And how do you respond to some of your fellow Democrats calling the move theatrics that play into Republican narratives that blue cities are poorly run war zones?
I'm not buying it. Okay. My job is to keep people safe. I have to, any way I can, I'm going to keep New Yorkers safe. And I'll tell you who does show appreciation for the people out there on the streets. Mm-hmm.
I don't blame Hochul. I really don't. She didn't pass the law. She wasn't even in office when that law got passed, I'm pretty sure. Let me double check. Make sure I got this one right. Because I'm pretty sure that was under Cuomo. 2021. She went in office when this 2019 law passed. Let me tell you, Anna and Cenk. More so Anna, because I got to be honest, Anna, I don't think Cenk is a reasonable guy. I think he's a tribal partisan. And you know, I try to have a conversation with him, and he just yells, racist, you're racist. That's not solving anything. Anna, I think you've misrepresented many of my positions in the past, but sure, fine, whatever. I'll address you and to anyone who's interested. These laws get passed because activist pressure. The pressure from activists is not because they actually want dismembered bodies. It's because they want dissolution of government. When the New York Times, let me pull this one up. Let me pull this one up for you. Abolish the police, okay? Here we go. Yes, we mean literally abolish the police because reform won't happen. 2020. When the activists started saying abolish the police and the left, in general, not every single person, runs defense for it. Even the New York Times saying, no, we really do want to get rid of all police. Let me ask you, Anna, if you are concerned right now about individuals who were arrested and they found blood and guts and flesh in their home, indicating very likely that they murdered and dismembered these people. If you're concerned about that, I ask you, if you abolish the police, who stops these people at all? Sure, I believe innocent until proven guilty. I'm actually a fan of bail reform, but in its current iteration, it was fairly obvious it wasn't working. So that's why I say, hey, maybe we need to rethink this. This is not working the way we expect it to. When the far left comes out and says abolish the police, and the NYPD is defunded to the tune of $1 billion, and it was, as well as many other police departments, and I'm called far right for saying, hey, whoa, slow down there, guys. What are you doing? I give you, Anna, the world that the left asked for. There's not going to be a point where someone says, can we get a law passed that results in murderers going free? What's going to happen is they're going to say, we should pass a law that restricts whether or not the state can impose bail requirements on individuals because it's unconstitutional. And you know what that means? It means that the guilty will go free from time to time. Now, I recognize that. And I think there is a challenge in balancing safety, freedom, security, etc. That's why I'm for the Second Amendment. And I think with these lunatics on the loose, I hope you can defend yourselves. But this is the reality. There is no happy medium. There is no beautiful, perfect world. This is what you get. So if you're wondering how it happened and you weren't for it, it's called unintended consequences. Everything has them. When it comes to the TikTok bill, as a total aside, as I wrap this segment up, many people are saying it gives the president crazy powers. What bothers me the most is that people on the right, Tucker Carlson, Thomas Massie, Rand Paul, are giving you the most extreme interpretation of the bill and omitting from their arguments the restrictions the bill has in place, of which there are many. I certainly agree. The TikTok divestiture bill, which if TikTok does not divest from China, would be banned from U.S. services. You'd still be allowed to use it in the United States, still have it on your phone, still post content. They just can't host it in American servers and things like that. Yeah, there is a possibility the bill could, they could construe certain things, but let's be real. My problem is not the bill, the argument. It's that people are misrepresenting it to win a political argument. That'll always be my problem. The reality is the bill, you can't ban any news website. Tucker Carlson said, gives the president the power to ban any news website. No, it doesn't. It certainly does not. It has to be a website with at least 1 million active users who can log in and post photo, video, and text content and share with each other and view that content. It requires divestment first. It allows for judicial review, half-year time to file a challenge. And the end result is divesting from an individual. Now, don't get me wrong. There are issues there. The problem is all bills have these holes in them. It is impossible to make a perfect airtight bill. There will always be the ability for a misconstrued interpretation of the law. I read this great story about drinking in New York City. And when they passed the bill saying no public drinking, one of the city councilmen in New York said, let it never be construed that this bill would stop a construction worker from enjoying a beer on his lunch break. Certainly that's what happened. So by all means, you can argue if the criteria in the bill are met, certain sites, apps, etc., could be restricted in some way. First, it's divestment, and if that, then banning. So it is a bit circuitous. My only problem is the misrepresentation. The reality is, you name any bill. We went through the congress.gov website looking at all these bills, and tons of them have crazy, crazy powers being granted to bureaucrats, politicians, president, etc. One of them would allow a bureaucrat to ban food. They could misconstrue a bill to go to any local farm and say, you are no longer allowed to grow your own chickens, beef, whatever. Nobody's complaining about that one, just the TikTok one. That's my point. The unintended consequences of all bills are apparent. They will happen. And so we have to do our best. But that literally means when you say bail reform, standing behind your beautiful goals lies the demons that will be awakened. There is no happy medium. There is always the battle. And perhaps now for Anna, not so much Cenk, maybe you start to realize that there are deeply evil people who are standing behind these bills. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans, who will do evil things. Same goes for the TikTok divestiture bill. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 6 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Today, Tony Bobulinski testified before Congress, and he said that Hunter Biden committed perjury, lying. Jamie Raskin and Goldman are liars, additionally what he said. There's another man by the name of Jason Galanis who testified. He's currently in prison. He says that the testimony has put him in great danger. He has faced retaliation from the federal government, and he was even sexually abused. The man is on the verge of tears as he's testifying before Congress. The evidence is insurmountable at this point. I should say the preponderance of evidence is more than enough, warranting probable cause, or I should say presenting probable cause and warranting criminal indictment of Hunter and Joe Biden. It won't happen. After everything I've talked about today, it's hard to believe that a United States actually exists at this point. Tony Bobulinski, of course, he's an associate of Hunter Biden, has testified before. We know the evidence exists that Joe Biden was deeply involved in these illicit business dealings. There is a man in prison right now in relation to these business dealings. For some reason, Joe Biden is in command of the executive branch. The New York Times ran a story that said, it turns out the deep state's actually kind of awesome. And in their video, what do they show? A space worker, water protection. Ain't nobody ever claimed the deep state was a bureaucrat checking the water, the levels of lead in water. And maybe some people, the deep state is a reference to the permanent government, the intelligence agencies that enact policy through coercion and force, who run this country without ever having been elected. That's the deep state. And they are corrupt, they are evil. Certainly, you can come to me and say, the great people at the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, they're fighting against communism or China and all of those things. And that may have been the case. That's not what we have today. What we have is a collection of evil individuals, criminals, who seize the reins of power. And then you have the NPC subservient folk who are working within those departments. Look, the cases against Donald Trump at the federal level shouldn't be happening. Where's any dissent? Now, I've heard, because I've actually met with people who work in intelligence over the past several years, and they say, Tim, it's the same inside as it is outside. Handful of people are super woke and crazy cultists. And like the activists, they're willing to burn everything down. And then all the rest of the Trump people, just, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and hide. That's what they do. That's where we're at. And that's why I have no respect for police right now or federal law enforcement. Because the only thing I ever hear is the far left is willing to go insane. And the right wants to be non-confrontational. And they say it's the same inside as it is outside. Which means you've got elements in the deep state, as they call it. And what do? The same thing that Antifa does, just at a higher scale. What is the bureaucratic equivalent of firebombing a federal building for months on end? Launching false charges against Donald Trump? Colluding with political parties to seize power? And then the Trump-supporting or more moderate individuals who realize the danger of what's happening say, leave me out of it. I'd rather keep my head down and shut my mouth. All that is required for evil to triumph is that good men do nothing. Unfortunately, that's where we are. From the post-millennial, Tony Bobulinski accuses Hunter Biden of perjury, claims Raskin and Dan Goldman are liars. Hunter Biden declined to show up for his public hearing on Wednesday, leaving Tony Bobulinski as the first witness in the House GOP's impeachment inquiry of Biden's father, President Joe Biden. Bobulinski, who has been blowing the whistle on the Biden family's influence peddling since an appearance on Tucker Carlson Tonight a few years ago, continued to sound the alarm. Hunter's former business partner, here you go.
Should I allow Hunter to give his opening statement first?
Well, doesn't appear Mr. Biden showed up for his public hearing, so we'll recognize you, Mr. Bobulinski.
Ha ha ha, we get it. Hunter Biden perjured himself, he says in this video.
Biden gave his transcribed interview on February 28th and lied throughout his testimony. Here's just one egregious example of Hunter's perjury. He lied to the committee on important details concerning his money demands and threats to CFC in text messages on July 30th and 31st, 2017. He leveraged his father's presence next to him in that infamous text to strong-arm CFC to paying Hunter immediately. Jim Biden also lied extensively throughout his transcribed interview on February 21st and perjured himself. An example of that, on page 100 of his transcript, Jim is asked specifically, do you recall having a meeting with Hunter Biden, Tony Bobulinski, and Joe Biden? Jim's response, absolutely not. The committee was so shocked by his perjury that they asked him the same question multiple times. Each time he denied meeting with me and Joe Biden. After the committee showed him text messages confirming that I met with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Jim Biden at the Beverly Hilton in May 2017, Jim Biden, with a former U.S. attorney lawyer sitting next to him, still denied that meeting took place. Hunter Biden, in his own transcribed interview, confirmed that that meeting took place. Hunter confirmed his uncle perjured himself in front of this committee. I'm simply here to tell the truth to the American people.
Wow. And what's going to happen? Nothing? That's amazing. In his written statement, Bob Bielinski calls out Reps Jamie Raskin and Dan Goldman, saying they will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Yeah, Raskin. Oh, he's great. He's about 20 minutes away from me. Many of the people who work at TimCast are actually constituents of his. And he's an evil guy.
You're presented here today with two narratives in this investigation. A false one being pushed.
I'm not going to play that clip. Can I just give a shout out to everybody? Normalize your audio. You can't even hear these clips. So, and don't look at me. If I were to play post-millennial, come on, guys. If I were to play this clip, just like for myself, I got to crank the volume all the way up. You guys know what I'm talking about. So there's nothing I can do to crank the audio up on an already normalized podcast. So I'd have to go in and edit it after the fact. As he delivered the testimony, he was disrupted by Jamie Raskin, who said that Bob Bielinski called members of this committee liars. And whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee, does it apply or does it not? James Comer said the rule does not apply to a witness. Hunter Biden requested a public hearing, and when it was granted, declined to show up. The House Oversight Committee recommended charges of contempt of Congress, but levied against Hunter Biden, when he previously refused to attend a deposition. In this clip, I'll just play it for you. Hopefully the audio is loud enough.
Microphone. Mr. Bobulinski, was Hunter Biden telling the truth when he testified under oath that his father was never involved in any of his business dealings?
No, he was not. Those are all blatant lies.
Well, there you go. And then what do we have here? Simon Ateba. Subject to sexual abuse in prisons as retaliation for Hunter Biden case. Jason Galanis, a former business associate of Hunter Biden, testifies about Hunter Biden's alleged business dealings. He says that while he is in prison, Hunter Biden is a free man for political reasons. Galanis is serving a 15-year sentence in federal prison, and he says he was sexually abused in prison and alleges retribution from the federal government. Yeah. Welcome to the brave new world. It's not surprising. These things have happened forever. It appears that his story is... I don't know if he's trying to make that direct connection, but it appears so that he's basically saying when he decided to speak out and alert people to what was going on, providing evidence, the corrupt individuals in government, the Biden crime family, whatever you want to call it, set out to retaliate against him to the point where he was sexually abused because they know it's a form of torture. And it's colloquially, I mean, it's a joke in the United States. How horrifying is that? That we live in a world where in this country, the left, they gloat, they laugh about it. That these people will be raped in prison. That's torture. That's what communists do. They don't care about enlightenment values. They don't care about truth or honesty. They don't care about a functioning system. They care about power. Unfortunately, that's what the world we're in. That's it. That's it. All that is required for evil to triumph is that good men do nothing. And so here we are. I can't believe we're seeing this testimony already. I think it's fascinating that you have multiple witnesses and even confirmation. They report that Jim Biden's lying, committing perjury, and so is Hunter Biden. And nothing will be done. Look at Fani Willis. She's accused of perjury. Nothing will be done because good men do nothing. All I can say is, you better hope and pray and beg that people actually get out, register people to vote, knock on doors, and come November, create a red wave that eclipses all other elections and Trump wins. Because otherwise, you don't have a country anymore. Next segment's coming up tonight at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/TimCastIRL. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.